This is the MLW Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling. I'm your host, Strigger. This is episode 51. On my side again, Dylan. Dylan, how are things in Tennessee?
It's amazing how things change from episode 50 to episode 51. And by that, I mean there are really no changes. I still feel the same. I still feel just as great about everything. I definitely think this is going to be an action-packed edition. Really happy to be doing it this week, too, because usually we have a little bit of a break between episodes this week. We got on the ball. I was thinking it. Then you said it to me, obviously, you being the boss man of the show. And I'm really happy to be doing this show this week, getting it out so soon. I definitely think, much like I posted on Twitter after episode 50, I definitely think we are definitely full Super Sentai mode right now, Super Samurai mode for myself on my GIF that I posted, yes. Which you know so completely.
I just want to sorry, I just I must have overlooked that.
Yeah, that's true. And I gave you Lunar Wolf, too, who's a great character in Sentai.
No, I saw that. Yeah. But you know, the past couple of days have been so incredibly busy with all the things that surrounded the New Japan show this last Sunday. Not only the show itself, but some things that came out of the show. For example, that Yuji Nagata wouldn't be doing another G1 after this year's G1 climax. And of course, our show number 50, we got some people who said that they listened to all of the 50 episodes, and that's actually, it's not that easy, because for a long time the show, not all the all the episodes of the show were available for free. Some of them were on the MLW VIP, so you had to be MLW VIP to listen to one of the to the earlier episodes of the Eastern Lariat. So we have here, I think, the great Zodoku, he tweeted me that he's one of the people who has listened to all of the 50 episodes of the Eastern Lariat. He concludes with some hashtags. First hashtag is ButtBlockBSucked. Second hashtag, did we watch the same BOSJ? And hashtag, Volador sucks. Dylan. It can't be,
oh,
right?
Well, I mean, I actually, Volador is not my favorite luchador, but I thought BlockB was fun to watch.
Yeah.
And he did okay. I liked his match versus Kushida.
Right.
Great Sudoku. Thank you for listening, though, even though you hated on Block B. I will say that. But, you know, it's fine. It's fine. As long as you listen, I appreciate your input. I appreciate your opinions. And you are truly great, Sudoku.
Yes. Thank you so much. Then, of course, we have one of our favorite listeners of all time, Drelladrell. He listened to all of the episodes. And then there was a third person. I apologize, but I couldn't find the tweet anymore. So maybe you tweet us again that you listened to then all the 51 episodes, and then you will get a shout out in the next episode. And I gotta say, I haven't had the time yet to do the outtakes I promised to do, but maybe I'll get to that over the next weekend. So they are coming.
Well, continuing the theme of Sentai here, I have to give props to Drelladrell, a Hall of Fame caliber listener, in my opinion. He is definitely the Akiba Ranger of this podcast, and I really appreciate him. That's a reference you will understand, but if you know anything about Super Sentai, you'll definitely, I think, agree with me. And the third man, you know, you should have tagged me too. I wouldn't have lost your tweet. That's all I'm saying.
Sorry.
If it was up to me. Yeah. But it's okay. We really appreciate all the listeners, whether you listen to all 50 episodes or just started off. But we definitely appreciate the one that listened from the beginning. And like as I mentioned when I was on the last episode, before I was on the show, I paid for VIP subscription to MLW and listened to these shows.
Dylan paid me.
So That's true. I paid you, and like, who could have guessed I would have risen so far since the podcast started. again, thank you to all the listeners who messaged us and continue listening to the show. Thank you so much.
Yes, there's nothing else I can add to that. So thank you very much for listening. And of course, you always have the chance to send in your questions for the Eastern Lariat. You can do that via email or via Twitter. The email address is japan@mlw.com. And our listener Laszlo did just that. So before we get into the wrestling, Dylan, there is actually a hockey question for you.
What?
Because Laszlo says, love what you add to the podcast in terms of Japanese wrestling. That's directed at you, Dylan. But your impact in terms of hockey is quite lackluster, he says. My question is, when did you realize that the Penguins were far superior to the Preds and that the Cinderella story was over?
Is this a real question? This did you write this in?
No, I did I'm not. I can send you the screen cap. That's not from me.
Okay. Like I said, well, Laszlo, when did we realize that the Penguins stole the Stanley Cup through a horrible, horrendous call? Now, this was like Red Shoes Uno level of incompetence in hockey, Striga. Just to explain this, there was a goal scored by the Predators in Game 6. It's a survival game. If we lost, we were going home, and we did lose at the end. But we scored the first goal. The Predators scored the first goal. It was a beautiful thing, but it was overturned. They took it away from us, Striga.
Oh, my God.
Due to a horrible technicality of the referee accidentally blowing his whistle too early. Could you imagine that in soccer? What if, in the World Cup, Germany scored a decisive goal at like the 73rd minute, finally getting the lead after a great goalkeeping battle with like 10 saves on each side, and they took it away due to a mistake on the referee's part. Could you imagine the outrage in Germany?
Yes, of course. I can totally relate.
So what is Laszlo talking about right here in the Stanley Cup? Also want to mention that Sidney Crosby is a punk-ass bitch. I just want to figure that out right now, because he didn't deserve the Conn Smythe trophy. The goalie for the Penguins gave back-to-back shutouts, and Crosby is the golden boy of the NHL, much like someone we'll talk about in New Japan that I saw comparisons to on Twitter from the great Japanese wrestling Twitter followers of mine and friends of mine. I definitely think that Crosby and Okada are definitely two peas in a pod when it comes to favoritism in their respective federations of sports. So I completely reject that, and I wish nothing but a poor season next year for the Penguins, because they stole it, and they also threw out one of the Nashville Predators fans who threw a catfish onto their ice at home. That's not cool. That's a tradition with the Predators, by the way, Stringer. People throw catfish on the ice. It doesn't really make sense. It doesn't really mean it wouldn't make sense unless you were here, but they did it in Pittsburgh, and he got thrown out of the game. He was banned from the game. How unfair is that? It's not fair.
Yeah. The great part about this is usually when you get your 1 minute of rage about hockey or football, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about, so...
That's true. I apologize. I try to bring it around by comparing it to soccer in some way, or football, as some people. I try to make that, because I know a lot of our European listeners and international listeners as well don't really know that much about these American sports and American teams especially. But I was very heartbroken by that game, by Game 6. We did lose. The Penguins did win.
Yes, at least I can relate to the basics of sports. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I give credit to some people on the Penguins, but not Sidney Crosby.
Okay, so how do I transition from here to Dominion? I don't know. There is no transition. So why don't we just get into Dominion, Dylan?
Let's just go to it.
New Japan Dominion 611 in Osaka Joe Hall this past Sunday, June 11, in front of almost 12,000 fans. The attendance rose from approximately 9,900, so approximately 10,000 to almost 12,000. So they sold out the show actually a couple of days in advance. And that's really a testament to what New Japan brings to the table, and especially, of course, the main event matches were the matches that sold out the place. Last year we had Okada versus Naito. This year in the main event we had Kenny Omega versus Katsushika Okada. But before we go to these matches, to the main event matches, let's just start with the first one, because I have something to say about the Young Lions, and that's something we had been talking about in one of our last episodes. When I watched this match, David Finlay, Tomoyuki Oka, and Shota Umino against Hirai Kawato, Katsuya Kitamura, and Tetsuhiro Yagi, I first noticed that the fans were so much into this so-called match number zero on the card, especially when Tomoyuki Oka and Katsuya Kitamura were laying it in on each other. And also, one point that Voices of Wrestling made on Twitter is it's incredible how well-trained those guys are that are in these bottom matches. And of course, here we had David Finlay again mixing up with the Young Lions, so that's to the point of one of our listeners that sent in the question last week or the week before that David Finlay doesn't have a place on the cards right now.
Yeah.
But what I took from this match is they need to do a Young Lions Cup. They need to do one.
Oh, I'm so on board with that, Striga. That was an idea I had a few months ago that I thought it was the stars were aligning for this to come together. I absolutely agree with you. I think it would be perfect. My idea for how I would hope that they would do this is that they could run it on the undercards of G1 instead of having a bunch of meaningless tag matches that have guys work and when they're supposed to be wrestling. I think that would be perfect for them. But either way, wherever they do it, I really think that this group, they finally got a true group of people, not just two or three guys, you know. That's the most important thing. And these guys are over. Kawato has great energy. You know, you can see that Oka and Kitamura, what New Japan sees in them. You know, Umino, he's so new and so green, but, you know, he's already so ahead of where you would think he would be. You know, and Yagi's even another newcomer that's getting a chance to show up here. And they're all putting in good work, especially when you consider how young and green these guys are. Unfortunate for Finlay, but I totally agree with you. I actually like that match a lot. I watched it as well. The fans really buy into these Young Lions. I'm not sure how much they think of Oka, because a lot of people were, you know, before his debut, already pegging him to be a huge future superstar. He's got a lot of potential. Everybody can see that. I don't know if they know. They think about that, but when they just see him wrestle, you know, they go to him, and I think they gravitate to Kawato as well, especially.
And that's another one. He wasn't in this match. He was in the actual opening match, teaming with Tenzan Kojima and Manamu Nakamura. No, he was not.
No, he was in the
opening. Oh, he was in the opening. I'm sorry. I was thinking about another show where he wasn't in the opening match. Yeah, he was in this match. And just think about what happens when, for example, Jay White returns and Sho Tanaka and Yoe Komatsu are still in America. So
a lot of people asked me, somebody actually asked me recently, where are Tanaka and Komatsu?
Yeah, in America.
And I said, they're not wrestling. That's what I said.
Yeah.
Poor show got his MMA debut canceled too. Did you see that?
Yes, I saw that on Twitter that his debut was canceled because the other guy, I guess, didn't make weight.
Poor show.
Yeah.
Poor show to knock. I miss him.
Yeah,
I like those
it's,
guys.
It's questionable why they are not booked right now in the USA. It's something that New Japan probably should get into. So, yeah.
Yeah, it seems like a good idea. Hopefully the days of that end.
Maybe they should adjust some of their business tactics there.
Maybe they should.
Yes, so this match was fun. The actual opening match was 2 with Tiger Mask W returning. Dylan, do you think Tiger Mask W and Kota Ibushi or Kota Ibushi could be in the G1?
If they were both in the G1, I'd really like that. I think that would be really interesting to see what kind of match those two stars have together. Or they'd probably be in different blocks. Just a hunch I have. But I think it makes all the sense in the world when you think about it. No reason not to have him in. This Tiger Mask W, though, he's really showing his spirit in these opening matches, I have to say. He's got a lot of high-flying moves, you know. For a rookie like this, he's really got a lot of energy to these matches.
Yes.
And it's interesting that he teams, that he's constantly teaming with the dads, though. Obviously, Tiger Mask 4, The Natural, and Yuji Nagata, his mentor on his TV show, as well as in New Japan. As well as Makabe, who didn't take any bumps in this match. But
yes. he did the King Kong knee drop.
Yeah, exactly. He had a very easy night of work here at Dominion. But I really liked everybody. I think the dads all, mostly, besides Makabe, he's an unofficial dad. I think that's why he doesn't try hard. But the rest all try hard here. You talk about Tenkoichi, you talk about Nakanishi. Just a fun match. If you've seen these kind of matches, you kind of know what you're getting into. Tiger Mask W brought the athleticism, and it was fun. I'd love to see Tiger Mask in the G1. If I had the choice, I don't think there's any bad reason for it. It would be great cross promotion for his TV show as well.
Yes, Tiger Mask W in the end exchanged some words with Togi Makabe. I guess there was some heat between those two. Maybe that leads to the summer. And
yeah, make perfect sense.
The opposing team, Tenzan Kojima, Nakanishi, Liger, they are slowly transitioning down the cards, mostly in these undercard matches right now. Maybe there's a different role for Tenzan and Kojima in the summer or for the rest of the year. Don't know if either one of those is going to make the cut for the G1 climax, because there are just so many guys that can be in consideration for the G1 right now.
So somebody's going to have to take the fall when it comes to G1, and unfortunately.
Some of those who will probably make the cut for the G1 were in the next match. Don't want to get into all details of the Never Open Weight 6-man tag team title gauntlet match, but there are Zanada, there are Evil, there is Tomohiro Ishii, there is probably Toru Yano and Yoshihashi in the G1 again. Then Bad Luck Fale, of course. Zack Sabre Jr. is one that should be in consideration for the G1. Juice Robinson as well. So many, many guys that could be in line for a spot in the G1 climax. And yeah, this match, it looked very weird on paper, but in the end, it played out to be a very, very, very fun second match on the card, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed this match. I thought it was a lot better than the Wrestle Kingdom gauntlet they ran. I thought this was really good. I think the Chaos guys handled it. Particularly Yoshihashi tried the hardest here. Ishii looked good too. Yano got a bit of a spotlight, but he's Yano. But they did some good stuff here. Everybody really got their chance to stand out. Taguchi Japan had their fun spots. I was very surprised to see the finish of the Ingobernables keeping the titles.
Yeah,
here. I couldn't believe this. Like this is unbelievable. This title reign is already prolific in the Never Six Man Trios titles history. So good for the Ingobernables here, keeping the title. Bushi getting the pin. And a lot of guys looked really strong here. Like you said, that probably are. If not auditioning for G1, they're just trying to get some momentum in the ring going into it. Kanemaru and Taichi didn't look great, though.
No.
poor Kanemaru.
Yes, sadly, my prediction didn't really play out with the Chaos team winning the belts. But in the end, we got a very, very good 7 minutes with Ingobernables and Taguchi Japan in the end. So, very fun match. Next one on the card was the Young Bucks against Roppongi Vice. What did you think about that one?
Good match. Nothing wrong at all here. I think we predicted that the Bucks would win this match. They did some different stuff here.
Yes.
I thought a lot of people have said on Twitter that it was a little different than a lot of their typical match here. A little more stuff that they did here. And one via a sharpshooter as well, which was very, very interesting. But it was okay. It was a good match. I'm not going to say it was a match of the year or a great, great match, but it was fun. I had no problems with it, really. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was a good match as well. They did some great isolation. Trent Beretta is extremely great for these kind of isolations that they do with Roppongi Vice. They laid out Rocky Romero on stage and really had Trent fighting to get the tag in the end, and it didn't work out for Roppongi Vice in the end when Romero had to tap out to the sharpshooter that came after the Indie Taker. And the Young Bucks, they took it to Twitter. They said, "I think last night we proved that smart fans think psychology in wrestling is only when working over a body part. It was embarrassing to see so many people saying stuff like, 'The Bucks are actually telling a story. Get the fuck out. We've been doing that for years.' Frustrating couple of days, but happy to be home." Well, what do you think about that?
I mean, I don't want to say anything. But to me, the Bucks are two of the most unlikable people on Twitter in wrestling. Very egomaniacal in a lot of ways. And I don't really enjoy talking to them or I did, you know, I thought they had a good match, but you know, whatever. Yeah. If they think they tell stories, that's fine. like if you say so, guys. But I definitely could see why people would think otherwise, to be honest with you.
I can see that too, and I really don't think that when I watched the match, I didn't have the impression that they were out to just to prove a point. I don't know.
How dare you enjoy that match, Trigger? I think there was psychology involved in it.
Yeah.
Very frustrating on your end. I think they were talking to you specifically when they said that.
I think so. I don't think so, because I'm usually people say,
yeah, so you like the Young Bucks usually.
Yes, people say usually you just dislike or you like the Young Bucks, but I think they are good, and I just don't have strong feelings about them.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. Like I said, they'll be in Ring of Honor. They have their fans in California.
Yeah.
So
the next one on this card was a match that I was looking forward to because the build-up was pretty good. And in the end, we had a nice little tag team title match with Tangaloa, Tama Tonga regaining the titles. They are now three-time IWGP Tag Team Champions from War Machine, Raymond Rowe, and Hansen. When in the end, Tama Tonga pinned Raymond Rowe with following the guerrilla warfare. I don't think there is very much to say about this, but this was just a nice tag team title match. And yeah, that's it, probably.
I thought it was heading towards being a really cool match. Mm-hmm. The finish kind of took a little bit down with the ref bump and the chair and all this. You know, but I thought when they worked, they did really good. I think they have good chemistry. And I'd like to see more. I'd like to see another rematch, something more full and fleshed out than the kind of shenanigans we saw at the end. That's my only gripe, really.
Yeah, I can see that, because it was 11 minutes, and in the end, with a little bit more time, you could have probably done a little bit of a better tag team title match, but still a fine match. And
yeah, it was fine. I liked it. I thought it was really good for what the time they had. Like I said, I think if they have a full match, it'll be a lot, you know, it'll be even better.
And actually, Dylan, kind of the same goes for the next match, because Cody Rhodes, or Cody, beat Michael Elgin in a special singles match in about 12 minutes. And I watched this match, of course, I watched this match live, and I watched this match a second time because I wanted to just look back how this match works in isolation from the other stuff on this show, because this show, of course, was so jam-packed with all kinds of different stuff. And I thought that both Cody and Michael Elgin, they worked a good match, and Cody also showed that he can really hang with these kind of matches in New Japan Pro Wrestling. In the end, that's something that I brought up when Cody faced David Finlay back at Sakura Genesis, was it? I don't know. Or was it at Dontaku? I don't know.
Yeah, Dontaku. Yeah.
Okay. The match was 7 minutes long, and it felt cut off. In the end, Cody did the crossroads, and that was it. And I said back then it was a little bit short, but in the end they established the crossroads as a deadly finisher. Here, they did a little bit of legwork, and Michael Elgin sold it well. And mm-hmm. that also played into the finish, with Cody kicking Elgin off the second rope and then just delivering crossroads to get the finish. Again, very quick finish, and came as a surprise to me that the match was over at that point. But overall, I enjoyed this match.
Yeah, you're right. It seemed like they had a little bit left in the tank for this match to get through, but they're definitely doing a good job of building crossroads as a kind of finish, and especially in this match, they did it in a different way. The setup was a little different than usual, and you know, it really gets over the crossroads as a move that can be hit at any time in the match.
Yes.
And I think it was good on that end. Good match. Nothing wrong with it. Not like I said, not a legendary match or anything, but it was good. It was totally good for its purpose on the card. I have no problems with this match whatsoever.
Exactly, yes. And yeah, we are slowly getting to the top matches on this card.
Oh, wait, there was foreshadowing after the match.
Yeah,
I want to get through when Cody yelled about how he was coming for the Ring of Honor title, and also made sure to call out Okada as well after the match. So he's definitely making himself and getting positioned as a main eventer here. So that was good.
Yeah, it's something that they play up in Ring of Honor, especially that
yeah.
Cody
yeah.
is not signed but still is going for the top belts in the promotions that he wrestles for.
Yeah.
So, next up was the match for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title between champion Hiromu Takahashi and challenger Kushida. Kushida recently won the Best of the Super Junior tournament in the finals against Will Ospreay, which we talked about in our last episode. And here, Kushida went on to finally conquer Hiromu Takahashi because he hasn't been able to really defeat Takahashi since Takahashi returned last November. And Dylan, what was your recent impression of Hiromu Takahashi? Because we talked about in our last episode that the Best of the Super Junior wasn't really his best showcase since returning from excursion, maybe his worst since returning from excursion. And then he had this match with Kushida here on Dominion. What do you think about Hiromu Takahashi after he lost his title to Kushida now?
Oh, I think Takahashi is an excellent professional wrestler in general. I think he's one of the been one of the highlights of this company for me. From an in-ring standpoint, though I questioned his booking in the Best of Super Junior. And here again, I wasn't losing sleep over this because I kind of figured Kushida would win. I know I've come under a lot of fire recently for position campaigning for Hiromu to get a strong push. Maybe over the top, some would say, but I still like him. I'm not going to cry sour grapes because he lost. I thought this match was really, really good, first of all. And I was really impressed with Takahashi here is always quality, but to me, they did something smart by having them work a totally different style of match. Kushida is starting to play into his, that he's not as popular as Hiromu to these fans. Mm-hmm. And Kushida did a great job, doing different things. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting a traditional match as they often put Kushida as the ace, and they did it again in the Best of the Super Juniors, but he made a good call to wrestle how he did in this match, and that was what I was so impressed with, more than anything with Hiromu. Hiromu is very good, a spectacular athlete, great wrestler, but Kushida was the one that stole the show in this match. I don't like that he won, to be honest with you, just because I think Takahashi's got a really special connection with this crowd right now in terms of star presence that Kushida really doesn't have at this moment. Kushida doesn't have that connection with the crowd, and it was on display in the finals against Will Ospreay, and it was on display here again. And I think in this match with Ospreay, it was more traditional Kushida. This, I think we saw a great twist in his story that I was really happy to see. And I thought he did a great job working, and Takahashi was a great partner for him. I thought this is where the show really picked up the pace. I thought this was a legitimately great match.
Absolutely, this was a fantastic match with some incredible spots that made me tweet, yep. Hi, I'm Kushida, and this is, and welcome to Jackass. Because especially when he did this dropkick on the outside where he just smashed Takahashi into the second, third row, it was incredible. And when he took this, sunset flip powerbomb from the apron down to the ring mats, we talked about this spot.
Yeah, that was wild.
You know?
Yeah, we didn't like it.
There were some other incredible spots in this match, but the thing that really stood out to me here was that, you know, you talked about the Back to the Future being established as a new move for Kushida, and it was pretty clear that the Back to the Future would lead to Kushida winning the Best of the Super Junior, and then in the end, people figured, okay, he got this new move now, so that new move will also win him back the Junior Heavyweight title, and it didn't. Because they did the Back to the Future again from the top rope, a horrendous bump that Takahashi again took here. But
that was insane.
Yes,
that was just so.
But in the end, they went to the hoverboard lock, and I didn't really expect Takahashi to tap in this situation, which made the match even better to me. I think. Because Takahashi then here tapped to the hoverboard lock again after a great struggle. And that's something that I wanted to bring out in the last episode that I forgot to. We talked about struggling in submissions, you know. And I've been
right.
I've been watching a little bit of Lucha recently. I've been watching the CMLL shows that are up on YouTube. And that is one of my biggest problems with Lucha, that there is just no struggle in submissions. that people just get into submissions and just tap right away. I know there is a different kind of psychology behind that, but the struggle in submissions in pro wrestling is just what I like about submission wrestling.
Yeah, that's more realistic.
Yes, like, it is.
To tap out right away, but there's not the drama involved with the struggle to it. And like I think I said this on the last episode, the Taguchi and Kushida match really emphasized that a lot in that match, where Taguchi had a great struggle. And I, like you, I thought it was very interesting that they went with the hoverboard lock to win here. You know, there's a lot of interesting finishes on this show that we're going to get into. But I think it made the match, like you said, I think it made the match even better. The problem is, and I hate to be the doomsayer here again, but what are the consequences of what they're doing with Takahashi right now, six and 7 months from now? I wonder.
I wanted to get into is point number one being that you said that Kushida doesn't have a crowd connection, because I don't really think that he doesn't have a crowd connection. After the match, he went in the Best of the Super Junior. He started doing this thing where he talks to the audience in the end, and then he makes the audience do the wave. Yeah. And while fans were clearly on Takahashi's side in this match, I do think that Kushida still does have a very good crowd connection here. And in my opinion, if you didn't like Kushida, then you wouldn't do the wave after the match. You would just say, well, screw the guy, I'm not doing that stuff.
I like Kushida, but I've been told, I just want to say this, this may be my own personal bias, because I've been told by multiple people that live in Japan.
Yes, I know.
Kushida's not that popular with the crowd.
I know.
And I see it in all of his matches, that he doesn't get a full reaction the way Takahashi does. Even against Ospreay, who's a foreigner. Kushida was built up to be the ace, and he wasn't in that match, and he wasn't in the Best of the Super J Cup last year. He wasn't in his Best of the Super Junior Finals. He wasn't in his matches with Bushi, and he wasn't in his matches with Hiromu. So to me, when you have so many matches and that's evidence of him not being able to get fully over that he should have when he has the push, that to me tells me that he's not at the level where he should be an ace, in my opinion. And I don't think he's a star. I know that sounds harsh, but I don't think he's the kind of person, just like I said last month, I don't think we'll ever see any sort of main event with Kushida defending the junior title. And I think Hiromu could have been that.
Well,
he
has done a main event with him, with Bushi last year for the junior title.
Was that on the second or third show?
Destruction,
of three?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
But still, yes, there are two points actually I want to make about this. Yes, maybe Kushida is not the ace of the junior heavyweight division they were looking for, but that may also be due to the fact that Hiromu Takahashi is just so much more charismatic than Kushida is.
And I think that's a great point.
And before Takahashi came back, Kushida was actually the one to go to in the junior division, because he still is very charismatic, but maybe Takahashi is more charismatic than him.
But what about when Bushi was equally as over here, if not more?
Exactly, exactly.
What about Ospreay, who's a foreigner?
Yes,
Ospreay's a foreigner.
Ospreay may get his shot for the junior title, finally beating Kushida, and that will surely put him over then. But another point is that to Takahashi, this is clearly not the end of the line. And if they had given Takahashi the third win in a row about Kushida, that would have been it for Kushida, clearly.
That is true.
So Kushida winning here opens the door for this story to continue. Not right away, because there's Bushi coming, but down the line you can always go back to Kushida versus Hiromu Takahashi, because now you not only have guys that mix up very well with, in the end, Takahashi winning, but now you also have a competitive feud between those two. And you can always go back to this one, and I think coming out of this match, I said that Takahashi will be completely fine, and nobody will be looking at Takahashi any less than they looked at him before the Best of the Super Junior. I'm pretty sure about that.
We'll see about that in a few months, because I don't believe that's true at all. I think there's been some definite damage done. I think this title is not high on the priority right now. I think it's much lower than it was even 3 months ago, to be honest with you, when it was semi-main eventing Sakura Genesis. I think it's a lot lower. than it is. I don't think this title is very valuable at all right now, to be honest with you, I have to say. In the grand scheme of things, I would be very surprised if we see it in any sort of position like that again.
So Dylan, when we talked about the title on Sakura Genesis, some shows before, it semi-main evented the shows, and then we said, "Oh, the title is so valuable right now." Here it is in position number 6 of an incredible great show with an incredibly great match. And while the title will never be as valuable as the heavyweight championship, I think the title is as valuable as much more valuable than it has been for the last couple of years. So I think we're here on a good road, and one minor setback that might be a subjective one to you doesn't do that lot of damage to the title, I think.
Well, like I said, we're gonna see. Yes, right? We're gonna exactly. see if it's the same. If it's in the same position that it is every single year, even when they waste years of putting guys they want to move up to heavyweight, the title on them, where it's not worth that much at all, and if it's in the same position at the end of the year, then you know we'll see. Like if things go well and we're on a good road, like you said, and Kushida really breaks out and is very popular, more popular. Well,
I don't think he necessarily has to break out. I think he just has to keep having these kind of matches. And
I love him as a wrestler.
Yes,
by the way, I just want to point out that out.
Yeah.
I just want to point that out. I think he's an amazing wrestler. I think he's one of the best on the roster. I really do.
Yeah, just continuing to have this kind of crowd connection he has. I know he's booed by some of the biggest fans in Japan, but still, in the matches, you always see that also people cheer for him. So
he does have his fans. Yes. Everybody has their fans. But like I said, I think when he faces Bushi, is going to be more over than him. In their match.
That may also be due to the fact that he's just Los Ingobernables, and they are...
That is true. I think Kushida is a better wrestler than Bushi. You were asking me, if I was in that crowd, I would be cheering for Kushida in this match.
You know,
if there were 10,000 Dillons in the crowd, he would be super over. But I don't really get that feeling.
Bushi's a very interesting point, you know. I know that a lot of people love Bushi, and I love Bushi too. But that's more due to character work than anything else. He is a fine wrestler. And I'm going to draw a comparison that may be strange, but I'm going to compare Bushi to Tiger Mask 4 right now. Because take away the mask, take away the outfit, and take away the entire frame set of the character that he has. If he was just a wrestler, he probably wouldn't be in the position he has.
Yeah.
Of course, he does have these aspects, and these aspects are very important for pro wrestling. And it's great that they have that. But if they were just relying on them as a pure worker, he wouldn't probably be there right now. But yes, still, Bushi and Tiger Mask, they are there, and especially Bushi has this great character work, and that's what really drives the popularity that he has.
They had a really good match at the Best of Super Junior 2, Kushida and Bushi. Yeah. I have to say, regardless of all this controversy and the title and everything else, I think they're going to have a good match again. I think Bushi can be led to great matches. I think his character work actually detracts from him in terms of a wrestler. I was actually a big fan of his when he was in All Japan. As T28, and when he came to New Japan, I thought he was actually very underutilized and underrated in the junior division.
Yeah.
But he's changed a lot since he's become this Ingobernables character. Oftentimes, he just kind of impersonates Naito, and sometimes he gets kind of lost in that. I don't think he really controls the Ingobernables character, which is true of a lot of the Ingobernables. But if he can just wrestle flat out with Kushida, I think he'll do good. But I do like Kushida a lot more, I will say. I don't know where they're going with Hiromu. I think he's just going to take a back seat for a few months, but he'll be back around. Like you said, I definitely agree with that part, that it's not like he's going to fall and die and be stuck with Tiger Mask at match one. But I think he'll become it'll take a little while and he'll come around, you know. But this level is not that high, like I feel like, for the title. It's basically my point, where it's at right now.
Yeah, very interesting point. No, the thing that they brought up was before Takahashi faced Kushida, he made it known that he would have loved to face Dragon Lee and Ricochet before facing Kushida because they beat him first in the Best of the Super Junior. So, let's see where that leads us in 6 months from now.
That's true. And the juniors in general, like, it could be a dangerous game because, like, they're going to have to decide to change things up a little bit because if he's not in a tag team and he's not in the title and the six-man titles are with all the other Ingobernables, where does he really fit on the card, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wonder what they're going to do with him, well, you know, because it just seems like any junior that's not in that scenario is kind of in no man's land. But it should be interesting. They should go for it. I'm sure he'll be a fixture of the Road 2 type shows and tag matches and everything like that. But on these main shows, I think it's possible that he's in the opening match of the next show, you know. And that's not a big deal. He's going down the card, but we'll see. We'll see. I just think there's a lot more potential. I think there was, much like other champions that have lost their title recently, I think there was a lot left in the tank. Not necessarily a new tank,
oh, man.
But there's a lot left in the tank. You know?
There are so many transitions I can use that you just brought up.
You know? I just want to throw it out there that sometimes title reigns end a little earlier than I would have wanted. Or
Dylan, just for the hell of it, and because I know that my guy Flosh from Germany is listening to, I'm just going to go with it. You talked about no man's land. And Dylan, how do you feel about Hiroki Goto right now?
How do I feel? I think he had, I will say this, I thought his match was really bad on this show. Not due to him, but he is definitely in. He could be maybe he could face Hiromu. That could be the next match. Because he is in big trouble right now, as he usually finds himself in around this time of year. I feel so bad. He's a lot worse off than Hiromu right now, sadly. But the match here, this never open weight lumberjack match, I mean, what can you say? The match that was intended to prevent interference seemed to just somehow, in their world, make it to where they had more nonsense in their match here by the end of it. No, I will say there was a great moment with Liger on commentary and getting all riled up at Minoru, and that was fun. He showed a lot of fire, and Yoshihashi stood out. They were the two stars of this match, unfortunately. It was not the people actually wrestling. And I think Goto seemed like he was kind of checked out here. I don't think he's a fan of this style either. And Suzuki, I don't know. I don't like this. I don't like this at all. And I definitely don't like Goto's positioning on the card. He isn't going nowhere fast, unfortunately.
You know, there are a couple of points. I enjoyed this match.
I can't believe this.
Because
how can you say that?
Just hear me out. Because we had this incredibly high-octane junior heavyweight title match before, and this match was just a fun little match to come down to relax while watching it without having to really pay that much attention to it than to the other matches. And so it was a nice little break from all the incredibly great singles matches we had on this show. So that's the positive I have about this match, and the positive, of course, being that Yoshihashi played a great role in it, but he wasn't.
He cleared the ring at one point.
Yes, he wasn't the main focus of that match, so that was completely weird. That Hiroki Goto was in complete afterthought in the match where he is challenging for the never open weight title, while Yoshihashi is the one who is portrayed as the real opposition to Suzuki Gun. And Dylan, I don't like to say it, but that was just a blueprint of Hiroki Goto's career.
Yeah, this is definitely, definitely a good, really minor, mini version of his career, all in a nutshell. But this reminded me of when Ishii challenged Naito for the title, and then Okada was on the outside, and he got a big hope spot late in the match. I will say that Goto, when he hit the GTR, and Taichi pulled out the ref, that crowd was way with Goto. They reacted huge to that. And that was good to see. That was probably the highlight of this, when Taichi pulled the ref out.
Yes.
That, like Liger throwing the chair, getting all mad. and Yoshihashi clearing the ring. Those were the fun parts. I hate this title reign with Suzuki. I hope he loses the title. Please, please get rid of these Suzuki Good matches off the show. I beg of you. Although I guess we will lose a chance to not pay attention to a bad match on a show. So that's definitely a negative if Suzuki loses. But I did not like this at all. I cannot praise this more than what I said. The good news is I am glad that they're giving Yoshi some focus here. That's good. He always works hard. He was on a kind of a big winning streak in these undercard matches before this show. Got a lot of good wins on the undercard, and had a little bit of a feud with Minoru, which they kind of shied away from. And they're kind of bringing that all back around here. So unfortunately, Goto was the sacrifice, and that's not fun. How many times can we see the same thing over and over, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just Goto, man. I feel for him. I really feel for him. Not just because he's my favorite. And I love Yoshihashi, too, so it's not like I'm going crazy over him getting spotlight. I feel bad for Goto. It's kind of sad to watch sometimes when you watch these matches. It's like, man.
It really
poor
is.
Guy.
It really is.
Poor.
Yeah, but we still had two matches to go, and luckily for you, those two matches were much better than this Lumberjack death match we had here. First of all,
they're definitely better than that.
First of all, we had Hiroshi Tanahashi facing Tetsuya Naito, the IWGP Intercontinental Champion that doesn't want to be Intercontinental Champion anymore. He said that if he would defend the title, he would have defended the title, he would have vacated it because he doesn't think it's valuable anymore, and he went on to destroy the title over the course of the last tour. And here we had Hiroshi Tanahashi coming back from his partly torn biceps within 3 weeks. We talked about that. He challenged Naito, and of course the arm he had this in kind of a cast. I don't know what exactly the thing was made out of, but he wore this thing around his right arm. There was some blood on it. Did you figure out from where this blood came?
I don't know. I figured it must have been, because I saw the blood as well. It must have been from the inside, I thought.
Yeah.
Somehow. You know, that's what I thought, because I couldn't tell either on any sort of outside. No cut on Naito that I could tell. Or Itana that I can see.
No.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I forgot it. Maybe I missed it. But that's what I thought. That was my thought.
Yeah, was definitely weird. But of course, the right arm of Hiroshi Tanahashi that played in very well to the story, and they built that up on the road to Dominion 2 days before this show on the Friday, and this match was really all about Hiroshi Tanahashi just being fed up with Tetsuya Naito. He attacked him right after the bell, and he wouldn't just let him go. At one point, he did these mounted punches that looked incredibly bad, but they looked bad because Tanahashi did it with his good left arm. And clearly, he's not a left-handed person like myself, and he's not able
you're lefty.
Yes, and he's not able to throw a good punch with his left hand. Maybe I'll have to go to Japan and teach Tanahashi a thing or two. These mounted punches looked horrendous, but of course they played into the story. And much more of Tanahashi just being fed up with Naito was when he had him on the ground and he stomped on him, and in the end he spat at him. And I've never seen Hiroshi Tanahashi spitting at anybody. So that played into the story as well. And of course, then here again, the limp work of Naito's knee being worked over while Naito tried to work over Tanahashi's arm. And I think both men sold their respective injuries so well. There is this moment I have in my head that when Tanahashi did the high fly flow from the top, he missed Naito and he just rolled around in pain holding his right arm. And Naito, in the end, of course, being trapped in the Texas Cloverleaf hold, fought against it but couldn't hold up anymore, and in the end had to tap to the Cloverleaf hold. Just a fantastic match.
I thought, honestly, this was an absolutely genius performance.
Yeah.
From Tanahashi specifically, I thought this was a fantastic match. I really, really loved this match. To me, I also thought another added layer. I love that spit spot because it was a callback to at the dome when Naito spit at Tana.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a great little thing there. I thought a lot of his rage and a lot of his the way he wrestled, obviously due to this legitimate injury, because you could tell from the way he was bumping that not everything was as clean as it usually is in a lot of these matches. But I don't think
you could especially see that when he did his sling blade.
Yes, exactly. I saw some people saying this injury was a work. Like that to me is kind of crazy because he changed the way he wrestled in this match around the injury. Maybe he's even greater than I think he is, and I think he's really great. But another thing that made this match special, I thought not only, the way he wrestled wasn't just due to him being fed up with Naito, but it also showed a sign of his desperation to win this title, possibly to save the title from Naito's craziness, but also to show that he still got what it takes to be a main event talent in this company. I thought he had a lot of desperation in this match that he had and he showed here. The finish to me, that made it even better than it would have been if it was a regular finish, because I think it's awesome when they do, when any wrestler uses a different move than his finisher to win a match. And that put it over the top to me and made it a legitimately, I'm going to remember this when it comes to match of the year rankings time. A large part due to that finish, I thought they pulled it off spectacularly. I think Tanahashi is as great as he's ever been in this match. I really, really enjoyed this a lot. And Naito was very good as well. Very popular, very over with the crowd, obviously. But Tanahashi, to me, I cannot praise him enough for this performance. I thought it was spectacular with the injury. And that's a serious injury he had, too. That was not, this was not a scratch he's wrestling with,
no,
to say the least. You really need to understand that. And he wrestled despite some things being awkward, despite not being able to do what he usually could and wrestle how he usually could. He was as great as he's ever been. So I loved it, man. I really thought this was an awesome match.
Yeah.
Truly epic, I would say.
Yes, when I thought about this match, I'm not sure, because I loved their Wrestle Kingdom so much, and I loved this one too. It's hard to
I loved the match of Wrestle Kingdom too.
It's hard to compare the two. Oh, it's I don't know.
I think I'll remember this one more. I think that I'm going to remember this one more, though. I thought the best moment was when Naito gave him the fist bump on the chest after the match. That was memorable in and of itself. But both matches were great. Like, you know, it doesn't even really matter. Like, if you said that, like, I totally disagree with you on the junior title at Kushida, but this, if you said the Dome match is better, like, I can't argue that. I think that's an absolutely reasonable point of view.
Yes, I think there is a case for both of them being in consideration for match of the year.
We talk a lot
about Okada, but the year that Tetsuya Naito has is absolutely incredible as well, with these two matches against Hiroshi Tanahashi, with his match against Michael Elgin that should not be forgotten. That was an incredible match as well. And of course his performance against Juice Robinson. He has a great match too.
Matches.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You're totally right. I've always said, I said from the beginning that I thought Naito is underrated compared to Okada. Got the hype, but Naito, with his meat of his resume this year, I think is great. And I don't rush you from having some sort of epic summer run through G1 either. You know, the dude is great. Like, no way is he a fallen ace. To me, he's still the man, and he won't get enough credit overall because he doesn't have the popularity, and I'm going to mince my words here, the popularity of the other three men in the last two matches, in the West specifically, but in Japan, I think he's still the man secretly, and I definitely think he's the man when it comes to the in-ring. I thought this was a great match. I can't say anything about that. Naito having a great year as well, really delivering, not just in terms of character work and popularity, but in terms of a wrestler, he is absolutely at the best he's ever been, in my opinion. He's never had a year better than this one.
Yeah, but especially his character work is so out of this world right now. When you look at the kind of matches that Tetsuya Naito has right now, I had to think, when I saw this match, I had to think back to 2013, when he had this G1 final against Hiroshi Tanahashi, and people were talking about what a shitty wrestler Tetsuya Naito is. And if you see this here in 2017, how great he is, how well he developed, and just what kind of a star he is. It's just incredible.
Yeah, he was always pretty good before his injury. I wasn't an especially big fan of his, but a lot of people thought he was the next big thing when he was coming up after his run with No Limit ended. And, you know, you have to give him credit for that. When he came back from injury, he just came back a little soon to be pushed in that high spot, I think, really. And a lot of these matches he had didn't come across great, obviously, to the fans here or in Japan. But like you said, eventually, after he got over those jitters and after they stopped kind of making the leg the focus of a lot of his matches, he could just wrestle normal. I think he really improved. And when he went to this Ingobernables, this heel character work, as we mentioned, He's really taken it up to a next level, and I really think he's taken it up to a next level this year. Even from last year, I think he's much improved from last year. And he was already really good, but now he's truly a top tier elite talent in the ring.
Exactly.
In addition to his character work.
And another thing that this match accomplished was it restored my belief in submissions in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Exactly.
Not only this match, but Kushida versus Takahashi as well, and of course the Young Bucks tapping out Rocky Romero with the sharpshooter as well. So great job done here, because we talked about this in the end. Maybe Okada versus Minoru Suzuki did damage to that, but then they here restored that.
Exactly. That's part of what I loved about it so much. I thought that was really interesting that they did that. I don't know who made this call or why they did it, but I think it was a really, really great thing that they did it. And I was very happy to see it. That was a true... I almost jumped out of my seat when I saw him tap out, because I totally wasn't expecting it. It was not expected at all, because they've killed this submission, this cloverleaf, and really any main event submission when it comes to these guys as secondary finishers.
Yeah.
So when he tapped, I freaked out a little bit. I was like, whoa! Like, when that happened. So I thought it was a great moment. I'm going to remember that. I'm going to remember that finish especially. And like you said, totally restored the submission. I think it really adds another arsenal to Tanahashi's game heading into the G1 now. They can do stuff with the cloverleaf. Yes,
exactly.
Particularly. Just nothing but good things to say about this match. I thought it was amazing. I really did.
Transition again on the topics of submissions to the main event. Okada has to stop doing the red ink.
Yeah. that should be done with. Remember that old submission he had?
The deep in depth.
It was like... it was another one where
another one.
It was almost a reverse abdominal stretch where he bent his opponent backwards over his knee, almost. You can remember this. He hasn't done it in a few years, but I remember it. It was just an awful looking submission. It's so terrible. I remember when I looked at, I watched the Access version, and there was a match. I think it was him versus Tanahashi in the Dome. One of those years they had a match. And yeah. Barnett basically said, this submission's not effective at all. I don't know what he's doing. and I was like, well, yeah, you're totally right. That's exactly what I thought. But that I think the red ink needs to go the way of that inverted abdominal stretch thing and just be done with, in my opinion. Yeah. It was bad. it was really bad. A lot of people were talking about it. I was surprised a lot of people don't.
You know, the bad part about the red ink is that they introduced it and right away didn't tap anyone except for Toru Yano.
Yeah.
Toru Yano, I think, was the only guy that ever tapped to the red ink. I think so.
Yeah. It just doesn't look good.
No, it just doesn't look good. But this was the second of the big Wrestle Kingdom rematches. And the question was, would they go longer than they did in the Tokyo Dome? And yes, they did. So I just want to explain how I watched this match. So this show at that point was already over 4 hours long, I think, or maybe around the 4 hour mark, I think. But
there was a lot of long matches on the undercard.
That's the point I was going to. There were long matches. There were extremely great matches. And then we had this main event. Of course, they tried to get you into the match very smoothly in New Japan main events, trying to start out slow and then build from there. For me, at that point, it was really hard to keep my level of concentration or my level of focus about this match up because the show had been so long. So the first 20 to 30 minutes, they just flew by for me and I just sat here watching, and then I figured, oh man, they are already going 30 minutes, and I really didn't feel like it went that long. Then, after the first couple of minutes where it really was about Okada trying to prove a point that he is really the dominant one here and really trying to hold down Kenny Omega, after they opened up with some dives where they showed how athletic they are, this match really picked up. And then there was this one point, I can't really quite remember what spot it was, but all of a sudden my focus was back, because I just saw what happened in the ring, and it developed to be an incredibly dramatic match up to the point that I completely missed out the ring announcer saying that there were 10 minutes left. I totally overheard that, and it, in the end, came to be a match where I was sitting at the edge of my seat, because I was so invested into the final, I would say, 20 to 25 minutes, that I really was so pumped and so hyped that I originally wanted to take a nap after the show, but I couldn't. So I went for a run and just took a nap after that. I was just so hyped up about this match. And I don't want to say, I can't say if this was the best match ever. I can't say if this was better than the Tokyo Dome match. What I can say is that I enjoyed this match so much that I watched it twice. And even on the second time watching it, I watched it one time with the original Japanese announcing, and the second time with Kevin Kelly and Cyrus, and they did a great job. And I pointed that out on Twitter already. They did a great job announcing this match. I enjoyed it very much, and I never felt that it dragged, and these 60 minutes, in my opinion, flew by the two times that I watched it.
I thought this was really almost like the director's cut of their Wrestle Kingdom match, almost. It felt like they added a little bit one way, a little bit the other way. It really was like a tale of two matches, the first part and the second part, I thought. And I don't know, much like the first match, I feel like we have the same opinions on the first match as we do this match, because I really feel the same as I did with the Wrestle Kingdom match, that the first match was really not that important. It didn't really play into anything. And even on commentary, I agree with you, first of all, that the English commentary really knocked it out of the park in this match in a lot of ways. And there was a point later on where Cyrus brings up that he doesn't understand why Omega, why he's not going back to the leg more after all that work that they did at the start. And it didn't really play into anything. That, to me, is code for saying that he's not selling it. Like, I thought that was that line is good. That's the type of line that is good for both in kayfabe, but it also speaks to a Sparta fan at the same time, if you can read between the lines. And I totally agree with that. When they got going, when they really got going, and things went really, you know, things really picked up. The first 20 minutes or so, you know, 20, 25 minutes, you probably could have cut them out, and you would have had a really, really epic match. But when they went for it, they did so much that you can't say that, like, I can't say it was bad, like, or lackluster. I thought it was, they overcame any sort of faults that I could say for it early on. The end of it, and the finishing stretch felt like, you know, you could say that the finishing stretch, quote unquote, was like 25 or 30 minutes.
Yeah.
The way they wrestled this. It reminded me very much of a match between Manami Toyota and Kyoko Inoue that went 60 minutes. There they went, it was like a vast majority of the match was the finishing stretch almost, but they just kind of ran out of gas at the end. They didn't go as far in that way. They went in the opposite, that the start was very slow and then kind of just padding out time. And that's kind of what I feel like the first part of this match was. It just padded out the hour that they needed. And that's why I didn't really enjoy it, but there was so much into this match, so much great stuff you could say. And they called back to their previous match too, which is always good. They kept things going on. I will say this. There was a great spot where Okada hit the elbow drop through the table, but the table didn't fully break. I thought that was a great callback to use at the table. Yeah. That looked painful.
Yes.
Very, very painful. Omega, to me, no matter what you say about these matches, you have to give this guy credit for wrestling his heart out in these matches. Yeah. And that's really the feeling I get when I watch both of these matches with him and Okada. He really, really wants these to be beloved and epic matches. And I think that's, in a way, a really good thing. And Okada did his part here, too. No real complaints other than what I said earlier about the leg and the padding out of the time. But I think the one criticism that really retained through all the great work that they did was I wish the finish had been reversed, because they had a perfectly good story to tell with Omega hitting the one-winged angel and then not winning the match. This finish, how they did it, Okada was about to win the match.
Mm-hmm.
He had hit the Rainmaker and was crawling for the pin. To me, there's really no reason for any sort of third match after this, because Okada beat him once and then almost had him pinned.
He came close to winning again, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If Omega had the win, finally hit that one-winged angel, that to me would make this a highly anticipated rematch. And it's still going to be highly anticipated, obviously. But I just think it would have been that much better if they had done it that way than how they did it. And I'm not sure what purpose this finish really accomplished other than making, you know, that Okada was about to win, which is fine. I don't mind booking the champion strong in their own ways. Okada definitely teeters the line at times, and we've talked about that before, in my opinion, at least.
Mm-hmm.
But I wish it would have been that way. I that's how I would have done it. But, you know, it was a great match. You can't take it away. Really, really good stuff between the guys.
There are four details in this match I wanted to get to before we wrap it up with Dominion here, because first one being that Kenny Omega in the first half of this match was really, as I said, held down by Okada, and Okada was about to smash him.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
He was really about to beat him. Cody Rhodes came to the ring with a white towel in his hand and wanted to throw the towel, and people went nuts on Twitter when this happened. And in the end, when it played out, it was so well done that they did this, because Cody Rhodes, with the entire rest of the Bullet Club, without the Young Bucks, of course, because the Young Bucks came to the ring with Kenny Omega as the Elite. Kenny Omega in the ring, Cody Rhodes on the outside trying to throw the towel, the Young Bucks holding him back, and while the Young Bucks and Cody are arguing on the outside, the camera takes a different perspective, and you see the entrance where the entire Bullet Club is standing, and suddenly Kenny Omega gets his second wind and does this reverse runner to Okada, and the entire Bullet Club goes apeshit about this situation.
Yeah.
That was such a great visual. And I loved about this that the Bullet Club just stood around the ring watching this match in awe, probably like the most of us, just watching this match and doing nothing else. They didn't do anything. And while they didn't do anything, people still hated it. That shows how great they are in what they do. Second point, I can actually put point two and three together, because it both plays into the part of the exhaustion that they had during the match. They went so long, and they just couldn't hold up anymore. There was this situation where they did the forearm exchange, and you could see in Okada's eyes that he was trying to hold on and trying to keep on his feet, but couldn't anymore. Then he went down after one forearm from Kenny Omega. I thought that was pretty good. But much, much better than this was the way that Kenny Omega avoided one of the Rainmakers when he just couldn't stand anymore and just sank down to his knees. Awesome.
Everybody talked about that spot. That was very memorable. Very, very memorable spot of this match. I think that might be the most memorable spot. A singular moment of these two. I think that or the spinning tombstone that Okada did in the first match. This to me was almost even more like, because it felt like, you know, I can't even describe how it felt like watching it. You know, it was just one of those weird things that you can't describe, but it really was a tremendous moment of this match. And something I think when you look back, I think a lot of people are going to have this on their match of the year list. And when they do, that spot will be mentioned in nearly every recap or review of it, I feel like, because that was something. That really was something when he did that.
That was something. And also the intensity in this match was from another, was on another level. I remember on the outside when Okada did the John Woo dropkick, He hit Kenny Omega so hard that on commentary they said, I don't know if it was Cyrus or Kevin Kelly, but they said that they've never seen anyone kick another person that hard. And there were other spots. There was one drop kick in the end where Okada just hit Kenny Omega's face, and you mentioned the spinning tombstone, and also one of the Rainmakers looked so damn hard that it was incredible. It was incredible intensity and really an incredible match. Great.
That drop kick you mentioned to the face reminded me of a moment at the beginning of Devil May Cry 4 where Dante hit a running drop kick to Nero's face, and it was just like that.
There is a video game reference.
Yeah, yes, I'm just throwing that out there. I love Devil May Cry, so I just want to point that out there. But I will say this too. What do you make? Because this was something I noted and that was said a lot. How do you think that they're handling the Rainmaker right now as a finisher? What once was the most devastating move in wrestling? He hit it multiple times in this match and went for it many times. Do you think there's any trouble in kind of spamming this move so much throughout the match and having Omega kick out from it?
Not yet, I think, okay. Because mostly they do the spot where Okada is really too worn down to do a cover. Yeah. But this time,
right.
For the first Rainmaker, Kenny Omega just kicked out. I just want to say this. You can only go to the well so often.
And I completely agree with you. I agree with that, every point you made there. But I just wanted to bring that up. I think it's important to state here. Because the Rainmaker is such an integral part of Okada's rise and
definitely,
story.
Yes.
I feel like so. I wanted to bring that up.
Yeah. Just as I mentioned, just don't do it too often.
Yeah.
So, as I'm looking at clock right now, because I don't have much time left, this is going to be another New Japan-centric episode, but we are going to be back with another episode next week talking about the other promotions that we neglected over the past two episodes, because we have to talk about the next tour of New Japan. Just quickly going through the main matches, we have Kisuna Road from June 18 until June 26 with three title matches being on the tour. Kurken Hall, June 20. Never Open Weight six-man tag team title. Zanada, Evil Bushi. Defending against Taguchi, Robinson, and Kushida. We have then the Never Open Weight title match. Minoru Suzuki against Yoshihashi in the main event of Kurken Hall, June 26. That's going to be a great, great atmosphere for this match.
Come on, Yoshi.
Yes. Then we have, on June 27, the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title in the main event, Kushida versus Bushi, rematch from the best of the Super Junior. But Dylan, do you know what match I am especially looking forward to on this tour?
What?
Not a title match, not a open match, nothing on the upper card, because the match I am looking forward to the most is on June 20, Tetsuya Naito and Hiromu Takahashi versus Hiroshi Tanahashi and Hirai Kawato.
Yeah, that sounds like a hoot.
That should be really, really good, especially with Kawato fighting in front of the rabid Kurken Hall crowd. That's going to be great.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. A great idea for a match. That's a secret idea now I have for Hiromu, since we wondered where he would be. He should just wrestle the Young Lions for a few months and just let them have some fun. Let them have some fun.
Yep.
I was talking to somebody about this, about the Young Lions recently. It seems like there's not a real type of veteran gatekeeper to beat up the Young Lions anymore. in New Japan, it used to be like, I remember when Okada was Young Lion, they put him in there with Goto, and Goto just beat the crap out of him. And Okada looked, he was great though. He got super over through it. He did a great job on his part too. So I feel like somebody needs to take up that role of a veteran, not necessarily Hiromu, but somebody who can really hurt people and put him out there. I also want to correct myself. It was actually Nero drop-kicking Dante in Devil May Cry 4. I mixed up the name. Oh. I just wanted to point that out there. But yeah, that's a really great match, though. I'm really looking forward to that as well.
I really like El Desperado in the role where he just punishes the Young Lions.
Oh, yeah.
On the Lionsgate shows, that's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely on the Lionsgate shows, he does a great job of that. He's definitely a spiritual successor. I think Minoru could be a great person instead of another champion. He would be the best. That to me is the best role for him on the roster. Just teach these young punks some lessons. Even though not Kawano, because I love Kawano. And Oka, too. I like Oka, too. I'm starting to get into Oka, too. So leave them alone.
Tomoyuki Oka and Katsuya Kitamura, they are going to All Japan Pro Wrestling on July 5, so a couple of days after New Japan hits the west coast of the USA. They are facing, who are they facing? Jun Akiyama and Takao Mori, right.
Yeah, Wild Burning.
On that show. That's going to be a very interesting show because this show also has Koji Iwamoto versus Yuji Okabayashi. So look forward to some of that showing up. Yeah. But yeah, back to New Japan Pro Wrestling. When they finish the Kisuna Road tour at the end of June, they are going to the USA for the two G1 specials in USA. There really isn't any G1 about this. It's just a big New Japan show, basically. In the Long Beach Convention and Entertainment Center, we have two cards right now, one full card and one card that is still, that only has a couple of matches on it. Just want to go through the first card that's going to be live on Access TV on July 1st. Jay Briscoe, Mark Briscoe, Will Ospreay, Rocky Romero, and Beretta versus Bad Luck Fale, Yujiro Takahashi, Marty Scurll, Matt Jackson, and Nick Jackson. Wild opening match that should be. And as wild as that should be Yushin Liger, Volador Jr., Dragon Lee, and Titan versus Sanada, Evil, Bushi, and Hiromu Takahashi. So they take use of the CMLL guys here. Then we have the first round of the IWGP US Heavyweight Title Tournament. Jay Lethal versus Hangman Page, Zack Sabre Jr. versus Juice Robinson, Tetsuya Naito versus Tomohiro Ishii, and Michael Elgin versus Kenny Omega. Those four matches, they do the first two matches first, then we have a break with an eight-man tag match. Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kushida, Jay White, and David Finlay against Billy Gunn, Yoshitatsu, Yoe Komatsu, and Sho Tanaka. Then they go for the IWGP Tag Team title, Tangaloa Tamatonga defending against War Machine here. Then we have the two remaining first round matches of this tournament. What do you think about this US Heavyweight title tournament?
And it's eight men, correct?
Yes.
Go over those eight men for me real quick again.
Jay Lethal, Hangman Page, Zack Sabre Jr., Juice Robinson, Tetsuya Naito, Tomohiro Ishii, Michael Elgin, Kenny Omega.
Okay. Now, that's a really interesting group of people,
yes.
Actually. That's not who I would have expected. But, you know, I could see this going. I think, really, either Omega or Naito would win. Would have to be the favorites.
Yeah.
And I think Omega is a big favorite. Although neither of those two men are American. I just want to point that out. the lack of a U.S. representative in this tournament is not good. But I think one of those guys will win. There's going to be some good matches, I'm sure, out of that group. Like I said, not a whole lot to say. It'll be interesting. Yeah. I hope Ishii can get a win in the first round. When it comes to my favorites, I just hope they win sometimes. I don't have any delusions of them winning anything big, but I just give me a win every now and then. It doesn't matter over who. Did you say Elgin was in this tournament too?
Yes.
Yeah, he's also Canadian as well. So, like, not a lot of U.S. guys.
No.
Where's Hangman Page from? Is he American? Is he
I
Canadian?
I think he's
too?
American.
Okay. I think Paige and Lethal representing America.
Yes, and Juice.
And Juice. I would. I hope Juice gets a win too. Like that would be nice. Juice could get it. Either Juice or EC. Because I figure Lethal will probably get a win. Maybe one of the four. So it's all good though. I'm sure it'll be a fine tournament. To be honest with you,
Hangman Page is from Virginia, so you can't be any more American than that, I guess.
No, that's the heartland right there. Good for those guys. Hope they can hold up their end of the bargain, show out well for America and Ring of Honor.
Right. So, yeah. I think either... I say this, it comes down to Elgin or Omega, I think.
Elgin? That would be interesting. That'd be interesting if he won it. I said, we'll see how that plays out. I think Naito has a chance, though. You can't discount him because he did lose his title. Because he praised this title and said how it was now much better than the obsolete Intercontinental title that he destroyed.
Yeah.
So that would give him something. But I think Omega probably win. The more I think about it, I think he's going to be their big, the number one star of the any sort of American excursion. I think it'll be Omega over Elgin. No, I'm a huge fan of Big Mike, I have to say. So if he won, I would totally praise that decision. I think it was cool.
Then, one match left on this card, IWGP Heavyweight Championship, Katsushika Okada defending against Cody. Dylan, I want to see the world burn.
Yeah, I knew you'd get a kick out of this, and especially the reaction on Twitter. It was not positive, I will say that, for the most part. I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that I don't hate Cody. I really don't. I like Cody, actually, kind of. At a certain level. But when you look at, especially considering who's challenging for the Intercontinental title, they could have really gone all out with one of these matches and had really aimed to have an epic match to really set their feet on new soil, so to speak, in America with something very memorable. Because I really think if they just have one great epic match of the year candidate type match that gets people talking, I think that would be enough. But I don't know if we're going to get that. And I like Cody, but I don't know if that's going to be what we see. I don't know if we're going to get match of the year, a 7.5-star level match.
Probably not, but Cody had good singles matches in New Japan up until now.
Yeah.
And he's now now in with Katsushi Okada, and it's going to be a very good match. That's going to be... I don't know if they do the switch here. Maybe they do. If they do, it's not going to be the end of the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. One person on Twitter mentioned that how different it is from that New Japan is able to proudly present their champions' history while WWE can't. I made the point that if you especially look at the guys like Tadao Yasuda, Bob Zapp, you know, you can't really be proud about that.
Definitely not.
So there is if Cody wins, is not the end of the title because the title has gone through so many. The title has hit rock bottom with guys like Yasuda.
There's been its ups and its downs.
Yeah,
let's just say.
And it's that definitely would be a great story to tell for the American fans that there could be a title switch if New Japan comes to America. In the end, I still can see that they don't do the title switch because either way it would play into the story of Cody getting the shot in America and Kenny Omega not being in the position here. And Kenny Omega, while you said that he, of course, he was beaten once and almost beaten the other time, he still could argue that Okada hasn't beaten him the second time around, and he could still come back. And the way how Cody came to the ring at Dominion, that also, to me, it projected the first cracks within the Bullet Club. Bullet Club and Elite not being on the same page. And this match could be fuel on this storyline.
I personally think that is a Wrestle Kingdom match that they're going to, that this is the first steps of that, Cody versus Omega.
Yeah, I can see that too.
I don't think Omega's going to get another title shot until next year, personally. I think that was the end of this for now. Though, I definitely think it's possible that Cody wins this, because we're coming right up on G1, and even if you say, because a lot of people brought this up, that Cody will not be a draw in Japan, it doesn't matter in G1. Really, like it's not gonna, you know, if that's what they're really worried about, if that was a thought, and it would only help Cody get over more to have the title, much like it did AJ.
He is very popular with fans.
Yeah, he is. He really is, especially in America, like in other places. And he's popular in Japan too. He's got a good reaction. It's not like he's died out there. You know, so you know, I'm all in. I'm not all in, but I do like Cody more than a lot of people. And I think if he wins the title, I don't think it's going to be the end of the world at all. And if he does, he's probably going to lose it back, much like AJ did when he won it right before the G1. He lost it in October. And I could definitely see that playing out. Even if Omega were to try to throw in the towel or something like that later on, we could see Omega try to cost Cody the match in some way to set up that if he gets really jealous about... like you said, if he was to win, he would beat... Not only would he get the title shot, he would have beaten Okada before Kenny did. That would be a storyline to play out if they wanted to. But at the same time, it's Okada, who they've really built up as a super champion right now. Beating him is going to mean something, and I'm all in on criticism of him as champion in his title reign in terms of how strong he is. But when he loses, it's going to mean something. That is the good thing. When somebody wins, it will mean something, and I think that's great. You know, so I can definitely see them saving that for someone either at the Dome or someone they have really, really big plans for. In terms of a true main eventer like Naito or someone like that, a G1 winner caliber wrestler.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, we are running a little short on time here, but I want to quickly mention match that we have left on the second day of this G1 special in the USA. We have, of course, the semifinal and final matches for the US Heavyweight Title Tournament. We again have the Young Bucks against Roppongi Vice, and then... First order of business after winning the IC title for Tanahashi was saying that he's going to defend it against Billy Gunn. And
great.
Yes! So everyone was probably sitting here and saying, okay. But, Dylan, yeah, we talked about this off-air. Billy Gunn, when he was in the World Tag League, he was in very good shape. And I really can't imagine how the match is going to be with Tanahashi, but I'm intrigued.
I think that's very generous of you, Striga, to say. It's very nice. You're a kind-hearted man when it comes to these sorts of things, especially Billy Gunn. Yeah, he was in good shape in the tag league. He was kind of. It's kind of interesting to see him in these sorts of scenarios that you never would have expected.
Right.
But as I said, I think they really could have used a great, great, great match on one of these shows. I think that would have helped their profile, something to get people talking. And I just don't know if Billy Gunn and Tanahashi is going to do that. Like, it's going to get people talking in terms of pure match quality. I really don't. Like, I no offense to Mr. S, but I don't see a 5-star, 6-star, 7-star quality match coming with Tanahashi.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'll be fun.
It'll be
kind of goofy and fun to have Billy Gunn. They already sold it out, but.
Yes,
I don't think that's the end of the line. They still have to show this. This is airing in America.
Exactly. Yes.
On Access. Like they can't just go crazy here. I feel like. So what are people going to be talking about after the show if we see?
Well, there are going to be five to eight other matches, so that's going to be fine.
It could be that second show. Like I said, we'll see. Like I said, I think that the first show, and the tournament obviously is there to do some heavy lifting, but we'll see. Like I don't see a great, great match in that list that you showed me. I think it'll be a fun card, but if they want to truly be as successful as Kidani claims, I feel like they needed a little bit more, and they needed just a little bit something more, just one great match, one great, great match, and I don't know if I see that in this lineup. I have to be honest. I don't mean to be negative because I hope this is successful. I'm absolutely rooting for this to be a great show that everyone talks about and loves. But I don't see it on that card. I don't see that standout match. It's not hooking me.
Yeah, we're going to...
I may be wrong. We may be wrong.
We'll see how this plays all out. But yeah, until then, that's it for New Japan for now. That's it for the Eastern Lariat for now. Thank you again for listening. And if you want to get into interaction with us, of course, there's our email address that I mentioned, japan@mlw.com. And you can also talk to us via Twitter. I am at Striga, Striga. And Dylan, you're on there as well.
I'm at Dylan0Sky on Twitter. I welcome any sort of comments about Power Rangers, Sentai, which one's better when I post my GIFs. Welcome comments about hockey, even if you're a Penguins fan and, you know, you had a cheating, dirty team in the hockey finals, the NHL finals. It's fine. Like, I welcome any and all comments about wrestling as well. I really love talking to you guys, like I said, like I always say, and really appreciate all the support we've got going on. Check out my other show, Lucha Talk. We talk about Lucha Libre and CML and Lucha Underground and AAA, begrudgingly, so sometimes. But we cover everything, and it's a lot of fun most weeks. A very A very, very good show to listen to. And it, Striga, you even watched the ML recently, so
yes.
That's good stuff there. I'm very proud of you for watching it, even though they don't struggle in submissions a lot. They do definitely have a lot of different psychology in Mexico than Japan. But I appreciate you watching, Striga, so thank you for that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, the past couple of shows I watched, and I'm going to probably be watching again. So, this has been the Eastern Lariat for this week. Thank you for listening again, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
Streaming worldwide, this is the MLWRadio.com network.